Today's daf is Sukkah daf Chaf Aleph. We left off in daf Chaf on days right after the Mishnah. So the Mishnah had spoken about someone who sleeps underneath the bed in the Sukkah, and we're going to continue to discuss that topic, and we're going to discuss specifically whether an Ohel needs to be Asi Bidei Adam in order for it to be considered an Ohel, or even an Ohel that's Asi Bidei Shemayim is considered an Ohel. That's going to lead us into a discussion of the way that they would draw the water for the Parah Aduma, that they would have, how they would raise a child specifically to be Tahar, and to go get the water at a young age before he ever had a chance to become Tamei for the Parah Aduma, and its connection to the concept of Ol She'eno Asui Bidei Adam. On Amud Beis, the Gemara is going to talk about how Rabbi Yehuda could have possibly slept underneath the bed in the Sukkah, if after all the bed itself is an Ohel, so L'chora he is not sleeping in the Sukkah, he's sleeping underneath a different Ohel. The Gemara is going to have two approaches to that: either that the bed is not really such an Ohel because it's made primarily for sleeping on top of, not under, or that the bed is considered an Ohel Arai, ve'einasi Ohel Arai u'mevatel Ohel Keva of the Sukkah. And the Gemara is going to tell us two things we learned from Rav Gamliel's comment about his Eved sleeping under the bed in the Sukkah. And then the next Mishnah on Amud Beis at the bottom is going to talk about Tzchach that rests on bedposts, and Machlokas about that, but two possible reasons why Rabbi Yehuda would say that a Tzchach that rests on bedposts is possible. One of those reasons is the concept of Maimid B'davra Mekabel Tumah. So this is, that's an important sugya of Maimid B'davra Mekabel Tumah. So we'll see how quickly we get there. So the Gemara that we saw yesterday, the Mishnah had said, first of all, that someone sleeps underneath the bed in the Sukkah is machlokas. Tanakama said a person is not yotzei. Rav Yehuda says, what do you mean? We used to do it all the time in front of the zakenim. We would always sleep under a bed in the sukkah, and the zakenim never had any problem with it. Not only that, Rabbi Shimon reported that Tevi Avdo Shalom Gamliel used to sleep underneath the bed, and Rav Gamliel, in agreement with the Tanakama, apparently would say, you see, he's such a Talmud Chacham, he knows an Eved is pata from sukkah, that's why he's sleeping under the bed, because one would not be yotzei in the midst of sukkah by sleeping under the bed, like the Tanakama, and not like Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara that we saw yesterday, we just saw that one line, Valeka Asara, that L'chara, there's no ten tefachim, so Tirgum Shmuel B'mita Asara. Shmuel says, no, we must be talking about where the bed has ten tefachim, because if it didn't have ten tefachim, then it wouldn't be an Ohel at all, it wouldn't be an issue whatsoever. So Tosus points out that on that line, and if you see the first Tosus in the Perek, B'gemara Mukila Shmuel B'gavoa Asara, the Pachas Mikan L'chashavo L'hafsik, less than ten tefachim is not considered an Ohel to be mafsik. Umatzinon lemeimar de Shmuel l'tamei. This seems to be Shmuel l'shitaso. Remember, we had the three-way machlokas about a sukkah tachas a sukkah. How big does the top level have to be in order to passel the bottom level as a sukkah tachas a sukkah? So this seems to be Shmuel l'shitaso. De machshav perikama tachtona k'she'in be'aliona asara. That Shmuel said that the only way the sukkah tachas a sukkah is going to be passel is if the top sukkah is ten tefachim tall. Less than that doesn't count. So it wouldn't, the bottom one wouldn't count as sukkah tach sukkah. So l'shita so. Over here he says that if the ohel is less, if the bed is less than 10 tefachim off the ground, well then it's not an ohel at all. Avali ina chamaroi, the pasim shum dal yona chashiva ohel afal pi she'ina gavo asara. If you hold that like the other shitos, that it's four tefachim or one tefach, the different shitos and what's going to pass the sukkah tachtona, so that would apply over here as well. But then he says, no, maybe not. V'shema mita shayni k'dam b'gemara davila mita ol arai hilkol klum odu depachas me'asara lav klumhi. Maybe even if you hold that sukkah tachas sukkah is possible, even when the top sukkah is only four tefachim or one tefach, maybe by the bed it's only going to be a problem to sleep under the bed if it's ten tefachim. Maybe a four tefach bed or one tefach bed is not going to be a problem, because by a bed, by definition, is more arai. The Gemara is going to label the bed as more of a temporary type of ohel. But if we were dealing with a more serious type of ohel, like the ohel of a sukkah, so then maybe a smaller ohel would constitute an ohel, but a bed would need it to be, we would need the bed to be a little bit higher, a little bit larger. Okay, so the Gemara says now, Tanana, so we have a Mishnah. Echad shchor shcharu mayim, o shratzim, o shachaltu milchas, v'chein midbach avanim, v'chein savar shal koros, mayi hilal otoma. If you have a hole, a cavity that's made by itself, meaning water has somehow created a certain hole, a certain cavity, cavity in the ground where there's now an ohel of a tefachai that's naturally made, or shratzim have burrowed through that area and created a cavity in the ground that's a tefachai, or minerals have eaten away the ground in that area, or the way different rocks just rest on each other, it sometimes creates an area in between the rocks and under some of the rocks where you have also a little ohel, a cavity in the ground, but it happened by itself, or beams that are piled up and somehow there's a little space in between and under some of the beams. In all those cases, that is a legitimate ohel legabe hilchos tuma. The halach of an ohel bar hilchos tuma is that it's mamshech l'tuma to the entire area underneath the ohel, and also that it stops the tuma from continuing to spread above the ohel. But Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Rabbi Yehuda says, no, that's not true. Kol ohel she'eino asur bidei adam, eino ohel. Any ohel that's not made bidei adam, any ohel that's not made by human hands is not considered to be an ohel. My time is Rabbi Yehuda. Why does Rabbi Yehuda think that an ohel has to be made by human hands in order for it to be considered an ohel? Well, yalef, ohel, ohel, mi mishkan. He derives it from the mishkan. Ksiv hachad says, by tuma, zos hatora adam kiyamus ba ohel. Pasuk describes tumas ohel, zos hatora adam kiyamus ba ohel, uksiv hasam, and it says by the mishkan, vayifros hasa ohel ala mishkan. Another daf yomi coincidence, it's this week's parsha. Vayifros hasa ohel mishkan vayasam uksmak seha ohel olav mi lamala kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe. It is one of the kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe's that Moshe did exactly like he was commanded to do, and he was poris in ohel on the mishkan. So mala halan bidei adam, just like the ohel on the mishkan was clearly made bidei adam, afkan bidei adam, so too any ohel that we're going to consider an ohel for the sake of tuma has to be an ohel that's made bidei adam. That's one of the qualifications, got to be made bidei adam. Now there is a medrash in this week's parsha. The Gemara is making an assumption over here that the mishkan was made bidei adam, that the way the mishkan was built, was constructed, was erected, was bidei adam. There's a medrash in this week's parsha, Parshas Pikudei, Perek Chaf Beis, where the medrash says that the mishkan was maimed itself, al yidei Neis, and not al yidei Moshe Rabbeinu. So that would ruin this limud a little bit. The whole way we're learning that that an ohel, Rabbi Yehuda Shita, that an ohel for Tumah has to be an ohel nasa bidei adam, is from the mishkan, and we're taking for granted that the mishkan was nasa bidei adam. But no, maybe the mishkan was made by a Neis according to the medrash. So the Sefer Emek Sukkos explains that no, maybe when the medrash says that the mishkan was erected al yidei Neis, that's only the Rashim and the Brichim that were Amdu Me'atzmam. But the Urios, the curtains over the Mishkan, Moshe himself was Pores, so that was not Al Yedei Neis. And that's the real limud over here. The real limud is from what's on top, not from the side walls of the Mishkan. Okay, so the Gemara says for the Nesu, how are the Rabbanan going to respond? It seems like a very solid limud that we learn from the Mishkan, that only an Ohel Asu Bidei Adam is considered an Ohel. Rabbanan Ohel Ohel Riba. The Rabbanan say the double usage of the term Ohel teaches us that by Tumah there's more than that. That by Tumah other types of Ohel are also included, and it does not only have to be an Ohel Bidei Adam. V'sav Rabbi Yehuda kal Ohel Shein Asu Bidei Adam Eino Ohel. But wait a second, can Rabbi Yehuda really hold that any ohel that's not made by human hands does not have the status of an ohel or a minu? I'll ask you a stira. Chatzeros, we have a Mishnah, Maseches Parah, and the Mishnah tells us how they would secure the water to use to mix with the ashes of the Parah Aduma to make sure that everything was done with the highest levels of Tahara. So it says, Chatzeros hayu benuyos b'Yerushalayim al gabei asela. They would build chatzeros, they would build small communities on top of a cliff in Yerushalayim, and the reason they were building on top of a cliff was because v'tachteim chalal mipnei kevrat tahom. They wanted empty space underneath where the community was, so that in case there was anyone buried underground, the cliff itself would stop the tumah from going to the community that was built on top of the cliff. You obviously couldn't bury anyone in the ground of the cliff, because you wouldn't want to start digging in the cliff, you'll fall right through. So anyone who was buried would be buried on the ground underneath, but the empty space in between the ground underneath and the overhang is where the tumah would fill, but the tumah would then not extend up on top of the cliff, and that's where they would build these chatzeros, umevi and nashim ubros, and they would bring pregnant women there, the yold Gadol Sham, and these pregnant women would give birth there, Umagadlus Pinem Sham Lapara, and that's where they would raise their children for the sake of Paraduma. So these kids would never ever leave that little area of this cliff during their early childhood years. Umavin Shvarin, and then when the kids got old enough to be able to go get the water for the Paraduma, they would bring these oxen, Valgabe and Delosos, and they would put on the backs of the oxen, they would put these large doors on the backs of the oxen, Vitinokos Yoshin al Gaben, and children would sit on the back, on top of the doors, Vikosa, and the reason for that is so that if they ever pass by an area where there's tumah underneath, the door will stop the tumah, and the child's on top of the door, so he's safe from the tumah. Vikosa shall even be a dam, and they were carrying cups that were made out of clay avadim, which are not makabel tumah, so they wouldn't have to worry about the tumah of the kli. Higil l'shiluach, they would get to the water. Yardu l'toch hamayim, they went down into the water. Umilim va'alu v'yashu lehem, and they filled up the cups, and they went back, and they sat back on the back of the on the top of the door. Rabbi Yossi says, no, they wouldn't go down into the water. They would have to stay where they are and lower the cups into the water by having it attached to a string and lowering it down that way, and then filling up the cups, because they have to worry about kevrat ha'om. If they'd come down, then they would have to worry during that small time period where they're climbing off of the backs of the animal. They would have to worry that they're becoming tamei. Vitanya, so why are we mentioning all this? Again, we're trying to prove that Rabbi Yehuda holds that even an oel it's not asur b'dei adam, is considered an oel. Vitanya, and the Brisa says, Rabbi Yehuda omer, lo hayim mevi'in dlosos el shvarim, that they did not bring doors. They would just have the children ride on the backs of the animals, and that was it. Ay v'shvarim da'ol shein asur b'dei adam hu, but isn't a shvar an oel that's not asur b'dei adam? It's just an oel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made. And nevertheless, it still says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, they didn't have to bring doors. They would just use the ox itself as the ohel. So don't you see that Rabbi Yehuda holds that even when the ohel is not made by human hands, even when the ohel is made by a Kodesh Baruch Hu, nevertheless, we're still going to consider it a valid ohel. So how can we say now that how could we have said before that Rabbi Yehuda holds that kol ohel she'eino asur b'dei adam is eino ohel? So that's Gemara's kasha. But before we get to the Gemara's answer, a couple of points about this Mishnah in general, about how they would operate this system. Tosus of Yermavi Nashim Ubros Vyoldos, Tosus points out, wait a second, if the children are being born and their mothers are raising them, so the children are becoming Tameh all the time. They're becoming Tameh to Anida and to Yoledes, because their mothers are always Tameh. So Afli Shayatinokas Tameh and Benita Vyoldos, Loy Choshin al Shom Mitumas Mace, Debaya Haza, Umituma Yosimikufo, Gonbal Keri. The only things there, the only types of Tumah they could really honestly protect the children from was Tumas Mace, which would require Hazah of the Efer Paraduma itself, which is what they were trying to secure in the first place, or Tumah Yotzeh Migufo, any natural Tumah to their own body, like Balkeri. When a child is very young, he's not going to become a Balkeri, he's only going to become a Balkeri when he gets a little bit older. Kedetani b'tosefta, she'megadno sanashu b'nei sheva shanim o'shmona v'lo yoser shlo yirukeri. And that's why they would only raise the children there till about the age of 7 or 8. Once you push beyond that age, so the children were too old, because we have to worry about Tumas Keri. You wanted to keep these children as pure as possible. But Frektos is a success tema. Ma mo'el milu'i zashay malim b'tinokos. Sof bin an ish b'shas kiddush, and also na'e for b'mayim, or b'shas hazal, the Rabbi Yehuda, all the Rabban, k'demuch parakhtarif b'kalpi. At some point in the process of the Paraduma, of making the mechatas, you're going to need a man, you're going to need an adult to be involved. Whatever that point is, it may be subject to machlokas tanaim, whether it's shas kiddush, whether it's shas hazal, at some point a child it's not going to be enough, so you're going to run into the trouble of having to have an adult deal with this with the mechatas. So what are we benefiting by having a 7-8 year old and going through all this trouble to raise a child like this? So he says that certainly we do whatever we can for chumra as a chumra. Whatever we can be misakin, we try to be misakin to do whatever we can. Because why do we do this? So what's he referring to? Because the tzedukim said that you're not allowed to use that a tful yom is possible to do the mechatas. So the chacham were makbid lahotzi miliban shel tzedukim to dafka use a kohen as a tful yom to do the mechatas. So since we would dafka use someone who's sort of a little bit tameh, so to counter that effect, they would have all sorts of chumras of tahara associated with the paraduma. They felt that they had to use a kohen as a tful yom lahotzi miliban shel tzedukim. They had to show that that's the halacha and that we believe in the Torah Shebal Peh and that we believe in our system of halacha. But in order, since they had that kula or that extra allowance for tumma in the process, they went beyond what the halacha requires in ensuring the tahara of the rest of the process. Now the next toast also has important points. Val gabein delasos, that they would have these doors on the back of the oxen. So mandiam begitnu benasi perikoyin gadol perik b'chol ma'arvin perik basu dechagiga. There's a sugya throughout Shas, Tosa says, all over the place in that Oel Zarek Loshmei Oel Lachutz Bifnei Atuma. So there's a machlokas in general about Oel Zarek. What if you have an Oel that's a moving Oel? Does that stop the Tuma from going up? Normally, one of the great things about an Oel is that although it spreads the Tuma to everything underneath the Oel, but it stops the Tuma from going past the Oel. But what if the Oel is not stationary? It's flying over. It's moving. So is an Oel Zarek strong enough to be Chotzeitz Bifnei Atuma? This is the part of the discussion about airplanes that fly over cemeteries. If a Kohen is in an airplane and he flies over a cemetery, even if you assume that the material that the airplane is made out of is able to be Chotzeitz Bifnei Atuma, is itself not Mekabel Tuma. That's Rabbi Moshe writes in the Tshuva, that it's made out of aluminum, and aluminum doesn't have a din of Mateches on a Daraisa level, because there are Chamesh Mini Matchos, there are five types of metal in the Torah. Aluminum is not one of them. So since airplanes are made primarily out of aluminum, we don't view them as matecha, so it's not mekabel tumah. It could therefore create an ohel. Yeah, so great, it creates an ohel, but isn't it an ohel zaruk? So that's a machlokas in all of Shas, whether ohel zaruk is shmei ohel. So think about what we're doing with these kids. We're putting a door on the back of an ox, and the kids are riding on top of the door, so the oxen are moving. As they're walking along, the kids are sitting on the back of the ox. So isn't this subject to the general discussion of ohel zaruk, whether ohel zaruk is shmei ol or not? Dol zark lo shmei ol lachutz b'pnei atuma. Matzi the member the savla krabuda dam mishmaitin loy mevin vlasa sal shram shakros sein ruchavos. So you have to say that those shitos that hold ol zark is lo shmei ol hold like Rabbi Yehuda that they wouldn't bring the doors in the first place. Says Tosas, yeah, but what does that solve? The oxen themselves are also an ol zark. They're also moving. The avli shagam heim ol zark mikomakom b'ditu gali rachmanu the chashiv yol kedarshin midchsev ubat samos v'gidim tzalcheni. We're going to see later in today's daf that there's a special gzeres hakasav that we consider the oxen to be called an ohel. So if the Torah specifically refers to the oxen as an ohel, then whatever you hold about ohel zarek in general, obviously an ox is an exception if the Torah calls it an ohel. But the delasos, they may not be an ohel. If you hold ohel zarek lav shmei ohel, then the delasos would not be an ohel. Now the reason they had to put doors in the first place, meaning what's wrong with Rabbi Yehuda's suggestion of not putting doors and just using the oxen? Is there any problem with using the oxen? What was the havamina that they would put doors in the first place, according to the Tanakhama? So Rashi, Maseches Vachim, writes, it was to be mafsik bein ragleim shalatinokos la'aretz. If the kid's riding the animal, so his legs are on both sides of the animal, so it could be that his feet are going to go over the ground, even though the body of the child, the majority of his body is going to be on top of the animal, his legs are going to be on the side of the animal. So we don't want it to be malal lekarka, but the Rambam in the Perush Mishnayos in the third parak of Parah, and the Rambam in Hilchos Paraduma, the second parak of Hilchos Paraduma, says that they would take shvarim shakresim rachav validezel lo yahilu ragli atinok al gabi kevratom, and because of that, even the legs of the children would not be mayel al kevratom. But mikol makom eviu delasos dos al gabi shram kedei lasos ohel. Even though the children are entirely with their legs entirely on top of the animal and would have been even without the door, still they bring a door to make an ohel. So it's unclear why. He never says why they would bring the door. So Sfasema says, what's the point of the door? What's wrong with the Gufan Shel Shvarim? And he leaves it as a Tzarech Iyun. So in the Sefer Chasdei David on the Tosefta in Parah says that according to the Rambam, the Tanakam required the door because of a Mali Yisera. That Erech Hanami, it's not Mikra Din, it's a Mali Yisera, it's an extra Chumra that we have amongst the list of Chumras that we have for Parah. This is just an extra Chumra. The Ritva says that they would have to use doors as opposed to mats, because mats are Roy L'Shchiva and are Mekabel Tumas Medrus. A door is not a Soy L'Shchiva, so it's not Mekabel Tumas Medrus, so they would have to use something that cannot be Mekabel Tuma whatsoever. That's why they specifically use doors. It was another interesting question that the Achronim raised. There is a Magen Avraham, Rav Shechter always points out, Magen Avraham quotes a Rokeach about an Eishes Kohen that's Mu'uberes. Rokeach talks about, what if you have a pregnant Eishes Kohen? So is she allowed to go to a cemetery? So the Rokeach says, yes, she's allowed to go to a cemetery because of a Svek Sveka. Because maybe the child is a girl, and a girl, Bas Kohen, is allowed to become Tameh. And even if the child is not a girl, maybe it's going to be a Nefel. Maybe the child is never going to make it. Anyway, so it's a Svek Sveka. So because of the Svek Sveka, you're allowed to go to the cemetery. So the Achronim point out that you see from there that if we know that the child is a Zachar, then she would be allowed to go to the cemetery, because apparently it's Metameh the child. So wait a second, if that's the case, meaning that Pashtus, without that Rokeach, we would have said, no, it's not Metameh the child, it's Tumah, it's Balua. Anything that's Balua is not subject to Tumah, so the child's completely inside the mother's womb. It's not going to be subject to Tumah on the outside. He's not going to be affected at all by Tumah on the outside. But the Rokeach sounds like, yes, he is, that it's only because of a Svek Sveka that we're going to allow. That's a big kasha all the Achronim struggle with. Whatever happened to Balua? Why isn't the child protected from the Tum on the outside? So Rav Shechter points out that some of the Achronim have a whole mahalich that maybe the Isra of Tumas Kohanim is not an Isra that follows strict Gedarim of Tuma, but it's an Isra of Hiskarvus Lemes, that any connection to a mace, even if it's not actual Tuma, would be Asr for a Kohen, which would turn out to be a Chumra on one level, but also a Kula on the other, on another level, because sometimes you can have something that would be metame a person, but what isn't really called hiskarvus lemeis, like we were talking before with the airplanes. An airplane flies over a cemetery, he hardly has any shaychus to the cemetery. He doesn't even realize that he's over a cemetery, so he's nowhere near a mace. But so there's no hiskarvus lemeis, but midine tuma, it could be that the plane is not chotitz b'pnei tuma, and he is becoming tameh. So if you view the isra of tumas kohanim of an isra of hiskarvus lemeis, not of an isra of tumas mace, so then the airplane would not be a problem, but the baby would be a problem. It would also be a problem for Rav Goren's Eitza, for Kohanim to go to medical school. He said that Rav Goren had an Eitza that we say by metals that Cherev Hareu Kecholol, that if a metal touches a dead body, so the metal itself becomes like a dead body. But a Kohen is allowed to touch a Cherev Hareu Kecholol, he's just not allowed to touch a dead body. So he suggested that that a Kohen who wants to go to medical school should bring in a metal pen, let's say, that had touched a dead body, and he'll be holding it the whole time. So anyway, he's already touching something that has status of Tumas Meis. So when he touches dead body, he's not being Mosif any more Tumah, because he already has that level of Tumah, but he got it beheter by touching the Cherev Hareu Kecholol. But if you learn the whole din, that it's not a din of Tumas Meis, it's a din of Hiskarvus Meis, then absolutely he's doing something wrong. Maybe he's not being Mosif any Tumah by touching the dead body, but he's certainly being Mosif Hiskarvus. But in our Gemara, the Achronim asked if the Rokeach is correct, that he could be affected by Tumah, so shouldn't we be choshesh that the babies already became Tameh when their mothers were pregnant? So what does it help that the mothers gave birth on top of these cliffs? Anyway, the babies may have been Tameh. So the Mishmar Zakuna's answer is based on Tosos, that in a chinami, there's what to be choshesh for, but whatever, we could be misakin, we're misakin, just like we saw in Tosos, that in a chinami, there are other concerns. We can have an adult dealing with the stuff later, with the Meipara later, but we try to be misakin, whatever we're able to be misakin. So we do whatever we can to be misakin. Okay, there's other approaches that the Achronim take, but we'll leave it at that right now. So the Gemara we left off right now was asking a question: how can Rabbi Yehuda say that an ohel that's a noasi b'day adam is not called an ohel? I, Rabbi Yehuda, holds that the shor itself serves as an ohel for these children, and it stops the tumah from affecting the children. So the Gemara, Ki Yasser Rav Dimi Amar Blazer, Moda Rabbi Yehuda Kimlo Egrov. The Rabbi Yehuda holds that if it's more than just a tefach, it's a Melo Egrov, it's larger than a tefach, it's a whole large fist, then it's then for sure it would be an Oel, even if it's not Asui Bidei Adam. As Rashi points out, Oel Sharachav Kimlo Egrov, an Oel that's as wide as a Melo Egrov, Shu Yoser Mi Tefach, which is larger than a tefach, Moda Rabbi Yehuda Shalt Bishen Asui Bidei Adam, Chashuv Lios Oel. Rabbi Yehuda would be Moda that even though it's not Asui Bidei Adam, it would be considered an Oel. When does Rabbi Yehuda say that it's not an Oel? That's only when it's a tefach, but a Melo Egrov is more. Tanya Nami Yachim of a Braisa that says just like this, that Rabbi and Tosus points out, it's not a Braisa, it's a Mishnah. Tosus points out that Mashma L'choreshi Braisa, v'hi Mishnah Shlema b'Mesach Salos, is actually a Mishnah. U'moda Rabbi Yehuda b'shkifinu b'nikiki aslaim, that Rabbi Yehuda's moda, by shkivin in the kikei aslam, by certain rocks and clefts in the rock. Varedelis diyesh so period. So you see, why is Rabbi Yehuda moda by those things? Because it's melo egrov, so he's moda. That would be considered an ohel. I frek the gemara varedelis diyesh b'kama egropin v'katan Rabbi Yehuda omer loy mivin v'lasa salas shvarim. So why doesn't the delis work according to Rabbi Yehuda? If anything that's larger than a melo egrov is big enough to create an ohel, so why wouldn't the delis work? Why wouldn't the door work? The door is certainly more than. And it's many a groping. So answers the Gemara, two possibilities. Number one, Amar Abaye lo hutzruchu lahavid v'lasos. Rabbi Yehuda didn't say that a door doesn't work. He said you don't have to bring a door, but of course the door works. Even the shard itself works. Putting a door on the back of the shard, of course, is going to work. He just meant to say that we don't require bringing a door. Rava Amar lo yemivin v'lasos kalikar meisha daito shaltino gasa alav shemi yotzi rosho echem mevar v'yitame bekevratom. Now the problem with the door is not that the door is an invalid ohel, it's that the door is going to give the child a little too much confidence. He's going to feel too secure, and since he's going to feel secure, he's going to move around too much on top of the door, and he's going to stick body parts, so he's not going to keep his hands and arms in the vehicle at all times, and he's going to be mahil on the kevrat tom that may be beyond where the door is. The havamina of the Gemara is very difficult. Now, when we read that machlokas in Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says, lo yimavin thus kalikar, is that the way he read it, that loyim vin dlossos, that dlossos don't work, and therefore you need the shard? What kind of havamina? So Tosus is bothered by this. Anyway, even if you want to say, forget about the Mole Agrov. Rabbi Yehuda holds that an Oel Asa Bidei Adam is an Oel. He only holds an Oel Asa Bidei Shemaim is not an Oel. An Oel that's not Asa Bidei Adam is not an Oel. But the Delos is Asa Bidei Adam. The Delos actually stuck on the back of the animal. What's the havamina to say that wouldn't be considered an ohel? And why would we ever assume that the shor is more of an ohel than the door is an ohel? The havamina that the door doesn't work is very difficult. So b'kuntres pirush kasal kadaiti mishum de'in derech ohel b'kach v'kol shkein shvarim ulfiza tikshilei higufa. So v'tzarech lomer de kasal kadaiti de balei chayim chashivi lahatzil tfei midlosos lechashiv ohel avbi she'in derech ol bekach. So he says we have to assume the havamin is that the Bali Chaim are somehow are considered more chashuv to be matzil than doors are, more chashuv to be an oel that's matzil than doors would be, because it's more of the derech to for a person to ride on an animal than for a person to ride on the back of a door. But whatever the terutzim are, the kasha seems to be a much stronger kasha. What the havamina was. Okay, so tiny kavas. Rabbi Yehuda. We have a Braisa that supports Rabbi Yehuda directly, where the Braisa says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Tanya Kavasi de Rava rather. Braisa says like Rava, that Rava's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda, where Rava's the one that said that the reason Rabbi Yehuda says not to use the door is because we're afraid that children aren't going to be able to keep their arms and legs on top of the door at all times. So the Braisa says, yeah, that is exactly what Rabbi Yehuda was concerned about. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Loi Mavin Vlasas Kalikar, Nesha Daitel Shotino Gasa, love, the child is going to get too confident. Shami Yotzi Rosha, Echme Varav, Vitame, Bekevratom, he may stick his head out to peek over, or any of his other limbs, and then at that point he's going to become tame. Ela mevin shvarim amitzrim, so we bring these mitzri oxen, shekrososein rechavos, that have these wide stomachs, vatinokos yoshen al gabein, and the children sit on them, v'kos shaleven biadein, and they hold these stone cups in their hands, higil l'shiluach, they get to the shiluach, yardu umolim va'olu v'yashu lehen al gabein, they go down and they fill up the cup, and then they come back up, and they sit on back of the animal. period. So, frankly, Gemara, going back to our case of the bed inside of the sukkah, so if Rabbi Yehuda is moda that an oel that has kama egropin, that's it's a malo egro for larger, is always going to be an oel, doesn't matter who made it. Vare mita dieshba kama egropin. The mita is certainly has kama egropin, certainly is large enough that it's more than a tefach. And still, Rabbi Yehuda apparently didn't consider the bed to be an oel, because he slept under the bed in a sukkah, and apparently he had no problem sleeping under the bed in a sukkah, even if the mita didn't have kama grop in the chur, it's also bidei adam, so Rabbi Yehuda would hold it's an oel anyway, even if it was only a tefach. But it has alachum, it's also bidei adam, and it's kama grop, and it has every potential qualification you could ever have for an oel, and the Gemara's kasha is, and still Rabbi Yehuda slept under it in the sukkah. How is he allowed to sleep under such an oel in the sukkah? So Gemara has two answers. Answer number one, shiny mita hol ulegaba asuya. A bed is different because a bed is made primarily to sleep on top of and not to sleep under. It's not made to protect that which is underneath it. It's to be mahil, it's made to be used for on top of it, and therefore it's less of an oel. So says Gemara, and what about an ox? Shvarim nami ulegaba asuya. An ox is also made to ride on top of and not to protect what's under it. So kiyasa rav number blazer shiny shvarim hol maginim ala roam b'cham ne'acham b'gsham ne'agshamim. Shepherds sometimes, very trusting shepherds apparently, sometimes will crawl under the oxen to protect themselves from the sun or from the rain. So the ox is also made to protect that which is underneath it, because occasionally the ox will protect that which is underneath it. So Gemara says, well, wait a second, that's enough to be called something that protects what's underneath it. If occasionally you would use it to protect what's underneath it, or a secondary usage, even if it's not occasional, but a secondary usage of it is to protect what's underneath it, you can say the same thing by a bed, that a bed's primary usage is to sleep on top of it. But a bed also protects what's underneath it. It protects the shoes or the sandals that are underneath the bed. As the Gemara in Bava Basra says, that a mita shel Talmud Chacham has all you see, you'll find under a mita shel Talmud Chacham is menalim b'yimosa gshamim v'sandalim b'yimosa chama. That winter shoes during the winter time, summer shoes during the summer time, you keep your shoes under your bed, you put on your shoes in the morning, that's it, you find nothing else. But he said, the Gemara says, but a bed of an Amma Aretz, it looks like a storage house, it looks like a storage facility under the bed of an Amma Aretz, it's a mess under there. So that assumes a bed of a Talmud Chacham, a bed of an Amma Aretz. So the Gemara assumes that a bed of a Talmud Chacham has menalim v'sandalim, but everyone's bed has at least that, the menalim v'sandalim shetachteha, so the bed also protects what's underneath it. So again, Vaiter, why isn't the bed considered an oel? Ella amar Rava, so rather Rava says, shiny shvarim hol v'asuyim lahagin al b'nei me'ayim shalahen. Shnemar o brasa tal b'shenu ba'atzomus agidim selcheni. The reason that shvarim are considered an oel is not because sometimes they protect the shepherds. Ena chinami, beds also sometimes protect shoes. The reason these shvarim are considered an oel is because the pasuk specifically refers to them as chach, that it protects its own internal limbs, that internal organs, that the top of the ox is an ohel over the inside of the ox. It's a pasuk that says like that. V'yibay yisema, another explanation of Rabbi Yehuda's behavior, of how Rabbi Yehuda was allowed to sleep underneath a bed in the sukkah. After all, the bed fits all the qualifications of an ohel, is that Rabbi Yehuda l'tamei, this is Rabbi Yehuda l'shitaso, damar sukkah diras keva binan. Rabbi Yehuda holds that the sukkah needs to be a diras keva. We started the mesechta by saying that Rabbi Yehuda holds that a sukkah l'mala mechaf amah is kasher, even at arbaan v'chamishim amah, it could be 40 amos, 50 amos, and we had a whole list of tanaim that holds sukkah diras keva binan. So Rabbi Yehuda is one of those tanaim that's on the list that holds sukkah needs to be a diras keva, vavali mita diras arai, but a bed is only a diras arai. The sukkah ol keva, and the sukkah is an ol keva. So v'lo asi ol arai, mevatel ol keva. That's right, ol arai cannot come and be mevatel an ol keva. Why do we consider the bed only to be an ol arai? So Rashi and Afiral said because a mita legabe sukkah is an ol arai, since we move a bed around from place to place. A sukkah usually you keep in one place. The Ritzgei says that a sukkah is considered more kavur than a bed, and therefore it's considered a keva. keva, meaning the point is just relative keva. The bed is pretty keva as an ohel, but relative to the sukkah, it has less kvius than the sukkah. Whereas the Meiri and the Ra'ah just explained, no, the sukkah is considered an ohel arai because even this answer relies on what the first answer said, which is that the bed is legaba asuya, that is primarily made for what's on top of it and not made for what's underneath it. So even though this is an independent answer of why Rabbi Yehuda slept under the bed, we're not saying that the bed's not an ohel at all because it's made for what's on top of it, like the first answer said. It is an ohel, but it's an ohel arai because of the fact that it's made primarily for what's on top of it. That's how those Rishonim understand. So the ohel arai is not going to be mevatel the ohel keva, so it's like you're in the sukkah. It's not like you're underneath the bed. We ignore the fact that you're underneath the bed. So frankly, Rabbi Shimon Damar Nami sukkah diras keva binan, but Rabbi Shimon also holds sukkah needs to be diras keva, and va'asi ohel arai mevatel ohel keva, and still Rabbi Shimon disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda. He holds you're not allowed to sleep under the sukkah. Rabbi Shimon is one that reported the story with Rabbi Gamliel commenting on his eved that he would sleep underneath the eved would sleep underneath the bed in the sukkah because avadim are potter from sukkah. So you see, Rabbi Shimon holds you not yotzi if you sleep under the bed in the sukkah. But doesn't Rabbi Shimon also hold that a sukkah needs to be diras keva, and therefore shouldn't we say ein asi ol arayim vatal ol keva? So b'ha pligi, that's the machlok should be Rabbi Shimon. Masover asi ol arayim vatal ol keva, umasover lo asi ol arayim vatal ol keva. The Rabbi Shimon holds that an ol arai can be mevatal an ol keva, meaning we pay attention to an ol arai like a bed, even when there's no ol keva right there, like a sukkah. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, if there's no ol keva there, like a sukkah, then the ol arai means nothing to us. We ignore the ol arai. We ignore the presence of the bed, and therefore you're allowed to sleep under the bed. It's interesting that we ask from Rabbi Shimon and not from Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel is also on the list of Tanaim that say sukkah diras keva bi'inan. So the Aruch Hanar points out, the reason we dafka highlight Rabbi Shimon as opposed to Rabbi Gamliel is because Rabbi Gamliel was just commenting on Tavi's thinking, on his Eved's thinking, but he wasn't necessarily saying lahalacha what he holds. But Rabbi Shimon says, ulfi darkeinu lamanu. Rabbi Shimon is the one that comments on Rabbi Gamliel's comment. So ulfi darkeinu lamanu, we learn lahalacha from Rabbi Gamliel that someone sleeps on, that an Eved is patur from sukkah, and sleeping under a bed in sukkah, you're not yotze. So we know that Rabbi Shimon actually holds this lahalacha. So that's why perhaps we're highlighting Rabbi Shimon, says the Aruch Hanar, as opposed to Rabbi Gamliel. Good. I'm Rabbi Shimon, Maisa b'Tavi Avdo Shel Rabbi Gamliel. So the Mishnah told us the story how Tavi Avdo Shel Rabbi Gamliel would sleep under the bed in the sukkah, and Rabbi Gamliel says, oh, look where the Talmud Chacham, my servant, is, that he knows that an Eved is put from sukkah, and that's why he's sleeping under the bed. Tanya, I'm Rabbi Shimon, Misichasa Shel Rabbi Gamliel, Lamanu Shnei Dvarim. In the Braisa, Rabbi Shimon comments, from the Sicha of Rabbi Gamliel, we see two different things. Lamanu Shavad Ptur Min HaSukkah. One thing we learn is that an Eved is Pater from sukkah. Don't we know it anyway? It's a mitzvah shazman grama. No, you would think that the Chayiv Tosus points out because Teshuvah came to Duru. So since Teshuvah came to Duru, or you might have thought that the Chayiv because Gzera Shavat has Vav Tesvav, whatever reasons, we would have thought the Chayiv. So we learn that Avadim are Pater from sukkah. V'lamanu, and we learn, Shayash and Tach Samito lo Yatzi Dechavaso. We also learn that if someone sleeps underneath a bed in the sukkah, he's not Yotzei his Chayiv. So V'lema midvarav shel Rabbi Gamliel, it's an interesting way of phrasing it, misichaso shel Rabbi Gamliel, from the sicha of Rabbi Gamliel. Why don't we say midvarav shel Rabbi Gamliel, from the words of Rabbi Gamliel? What's the sicha of Rabbi Gamliel? So milsa agav orche kamashmalan. He's teaching us another halacha, just derech agav. Ki yada amar ravacha barada, varmi la amar ravacha barada, amar rav amnuna, amar rav, minayin sha'afilu sichas tamid acham, tzricha limud. How do I know that a sichas tamid acham requires limud? Shnamar va'alo lo yibol. So he's dafka saying, misichasa shal Rav Gamliel, from the sicha, from the casual conversation of Rav Gamliel. So you see how much you can learn from casual conversation of tamid acham, that even casual conversation of tamid acham is something that requires limud, and we learn it out from the pasuk, va'alo lo yibol. The raya from the pasuk Rabbeinu Chananel points out is because we find that alei ha'ilan alo lo yibol means its leaves won't wither. Some of the leaves of a tree, that even the leaves of the tree, the main point of the tree is for the fruit. The fruit is the Torah that the Talmud Chacham ke'adam etz hasada. The tree itself is the Talmud Chacham. The fruit that the Talmud Chacham produces is the Torah of Talmud Chacham. So you think Talmud Chacham is worthwhile for his fruit, for the Torah that he produces. But the leaves, what are the leaves? Even the leaves aren't going to wither. So Rabbeinu Chananel explains, we find that leaves are called sichim, tachas achara sichim, called siach hasada. You have all over Tanakh that sichim is, so that's why sich haschul shel tamid chacham we associate with the leaves of the tree. There's a sefer called Va'alo Lo Yibal of someone who used to follow Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach around and walk with him home wherever he go, and he would just ask him, pepper him with all sorts of questions, and he wrote down all the answers to all the questions, no matter what Rav Shlomo Zalman said, even if Rav Shlomo Zalman said I don't know, or if Rav Shlomo Zalman said that's not a good question, whatever Rav Shlomo Zalman said, he wrote down very faithfully, wrote down every single answer that Rav Shlomo Zalman gave. So it was Va'alo Lo Yibal he called the sefer, because it was all Sichas Chulin. In fact, Rav Shlomo Zalman's son writes in the Haskama, please don't print this sefer. It's all the Sichas, it's not his Torah, this is the Sichas Chulin. He didn't know that you were going to publish his Sichas Chulin. But the guy said, okay, I want to publish it anyway. So, but Rav Shaptah points out that in Ruach Chaim, Balazhin, is the commentary of Pirkei Avos, he says, Va'alo Lo Yibal, Me'echi Teis, Talmid Chachamim is speaking Sichas Chulin. Talmid Chachamim isn't speaking Sichas Chulin, he's talking Torah all day. So what does it mean Sichas Chulin? So Rav Chaim Balazhin says, no, Sichas Chulin Talmid Chachamim means when the Talmid Chachamim says a shir, and then at the end of the shir he realizes he was wrong. It was a havamina, and the havamina, the whole havamina he built was wrong. The maskana was not that way. You can learn from the way he builds up the havamina. Also, he said Rav Soloveitchik used to do that all the time. He'd come in and say a knockout shir for 3-4 hours, and it was a beautiful beer in the Rambam. Then the next day he'd come in and say, everything I said yesterday was wrong. There's a Rambam here. I didn't realize everything I said yesterday was wrong. So what? It was all Bittul Torah the day before? No, it wasn't Bittul Torah. You learn from the approach also, even if it didn't stand the maskana. Okay, we'll pick up with the Mishnah tomorrow.